down to brass tacks. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Mr. Ellis. How are you?
I'm well. Peter, are you there?
I'm here, yeah.
Okay.
I'm not able to hear what the person is saying, though.
Okay, well, if you can't hear what the person is saying, we'll put you back on the telephone line rather than this.
Listen
method.
To me, Mr. Ellis.
All right, so in the meantime, we'll try to get Peter back. And,
Mr. Ellis, there's no need to get Peter back.
Well, whether it's for you or for anybody else, we'll get him back on the telephone line. Yes, speak.
What time the program going to today,
2 o'clock.
Ellis? 2 o'clock, right, because the jet lag will be there, that's why. Mr., they come coming tomorrow?
No, we have a special program tomorrow. Don't forget, People's Parliament is on Tuesday.
Mr. Ellis, Mr. they come coming any day this week?
No, he's here with you and me right now. So if you got any questions for Mr. Wickham, you could put them now.
It ain't going to be suitable. So don't let me go that way.
Yes.
Mr. Ellis, you know, I keep speaking about the program, right?
Mm-hmm.
The number one listen to show, and somehow when it's degrading it. Now, before when you called the program, you had a chance to interact with the telephonist. Now when you call the program, you got to be whispering, and Mr. Johnson or the producer whispering back to you because that they're doing another job. Mr. Ellis, that's devaluing the program. It can't be the number one listen to show, and then when they can't put the resources behind it, that should have. So that's one that I don't like, Ned, because I'd like to ask what time the program going to and who will be on this week and what, so you can get that over there. Anyhow, you could deal with that. I got two things here I want to look at with you. And one is the CARICOM nationals that put the electoral among the commission in court. Now, last time I called you and I was speaking to you on something, and you shift me on to that. I told you, well, yes, Mr. Ellis, that is something that I wanted to speak on too. Then you speak on it, and then the phone cut out while you were speaking. Another thing that I always complaining about. If you got to run, you can tell me you got to run, or have a nice day, you got to go or something. I don't like that I take my time to call in, and the phone gone dead with the moderator speaking. But this is what you said to me, that appealing is a waste of time. You can remember saying that?
I don't remember telling you that appealing is a waste of time. Because my recollection of the process is that you are able to appeal. And that's how the process works. So exactly. I can't tell you it's a waste of time.
Exactly, Mr. Ellis. But you did say.
I can't recall telling you that.
No, you did say. And I said it would not
be. In what context?
Or we can come to that. But you were saying it was not the appeal. It would be the length of time to take before they hear the appeal, or the length of time to take before they give the ruling. But appeal is part of the process.
It is.
Now, when the CARICOM nationals put the Electoral Boundary Commission before the court,
these are Commonwealth, it's Commonwealth citizens, you know. They weren't just CARICOM citizens.
All right, Commonwealth, Mr. Harris, don't be split hairs over the terminology there. The point is the case went to court, and they went with a clear understanding that if the ruling went against them, they can appeal to the High Court, and if that go against them, they can
so
go
can
to
the government
future.
Appeal.
Now, lo and behold, when the ruling went in their favor, their lawyers jump up front and saying that the Electoral Boundary Commission should not appeal. That is what jumped out at me when I saw that, Mr. Ellis. And that's what he wanted to speak on. You know, you can't pick your team and pick the other body else team too. You pick the best you got for you, and let the body pick the best they can find for them. And there was out of place to telling the people about doing appeal. And then you add fuel to it by saying about appealing is a waste of time.
I tell you, I can't remember saying that.
Mr. Ellis, I reminding you.
I cannot remember saying
go
that.
Go and check it. Go and check it, Mr. Ellis. It's in difficult. You can.
No, it does not make sense. Even if I said something like that, I must have been in some different zone. It wouldn't make sense to say it's a waste of time. Because, as you well recognize, the process allows for appeal. If the government decides that that's what they want to do, well, so be it.
But, Mr. Ellis, it is not the government It is the
Electoral and Boundaries Commission.
Commission.
Yeah.
So it is an entitlement.
Yeah, but you and I agree on that, so let's not...
So I expected to hear you.
That's no big point.
It is a big point, Mr. Ellis.
It isn't.
Because I expected to hear you as a member of the Fourth Estate chastising their lawyers for trying to deny the Electoral and Boundaries Commission their constitutional rights. And neither one want to put up in a hand and say that they shouldn't do it. I just only ask for balance when it comes to the program. All I've ever come for calls for that is balance, because anybody could put their side, I will put my side, but I expect you all to be balanced. And they should have been chastised for that. There should not be a wrong side, a threat to tell the other side what to do. You go to court and argue your side, and if you come up on top, so be it. Anyhow, Ms. Ellis, we can leave it there, because there's nothing we need to split hairs about there.
Precisely.
The process is there, and it will take care of itself.
Precisely.
Good.
Thank you very much.
No, I ain't going yet, Ms. Ellis. Mm-hmm. I ain't going yet, because you come in so infrequent now that we can't get time to handle what we got. No, you did Sergeant Corps early business there with a report out to the British tabloid or some tabloid outside.
The Telegraph.
Well, there you go. A lady stopped at her distance and made a report on Barbados. I have no problem if she got the urn she keep, she got the urn she keep. But when it is tantamount to defaming Barbados, then we should be prepared to defend it. Around the same time, and I'm not, if I say it right now as an ad in the paper, Barbados had been voted number one tourist destination in the whole wide world. And it was voted that by people exiting from Barbados. Not nobody stop at their distance and do it. And the people exiting from Barbados say it as the number one destination. And the lady in her cocoon or her office, wherever she is, could see it as the worst thing out. And you again, Mr. Ellis, as a member of the Fourth Estate, refused to defend Barbados. Mr. Ellis, you know, I said a long time ago, be careful that your all slips are showing. Nobody can get me to disgrace Barbados. You know, there's something called do not air your dirty linen in public. I didn't want you to, but some people say strip it on the carpet. You ain't going to strip it on the carpet, but you can strip it out one time. You ain't going to store it up there. And somehow, all of a sudden, nobody don't think that Barbados should be defended. But yet still, this is the first time in my lifetime that so many people trying to get the hand on it. Mr. Ellis, if you went on a used car lot, you were going to jack up your worst car on the lot. Answer, Mr. Ellis. That's a straight yes or no answer.
I don't think that Barbados is projected as the worst car on the lot. But Barbados is considered to be a car that is in trouble and it needs corrective action. That is why some people believe they should be in the fight to improve it. This nonsense that you are presenting, that Barbados, if the country is so badly off, nobody should want to be involved in trying to fix its problems. It does not make sense.
Mr. Ellis, do not
See it that way, and other people see it a different way.
Mr. Ellis, do not put words in my mouth. I am not projecting that Barbados is the worst. The exit visitors say it is the best tourist place. What do you think about me that living here? Why you want to live the place else, Mr. Ellis? You think I can live someplace where I got to run from the cold down to the warm and then run back? The people up there is running and come down.
I want you to appreciate this most important point. Barbados did not reach that status overnight. It is not the first time that people
have...
let me make my point.
No.
Let me make my point. It is not the first time that people have said positive things about Barbados. It will not be the last. Those of us who live here have a concern that we want to keep Barbados the best place there is on earth. And that is why many people are saying, look, there are some things that we need to fix. We need to sort them out as a matter of urgency because we can see trouble on the horizon. That is all that I hear people out here saying, you know. You try to make it seem as though people painting this country with a bad brush because you just want to make Barbados look bad abroad and in the eyes of everybody else. You want Barbados to look good.
Mr. Ellis, you know that ain't true, you know. But you can still often say, you know that ain't
what
true.
Part of it is not true?
So we ain't have Bajans saying that they shame to be Bajans?
Because there are certain behaviors and practices that they don't feel good about. We have been brought up a particular way. Many of the older people and stuff, even some of the younger ones, have certain values and positions in life that they believe we are falling away from.
Well, Mr. Ellis, well, then rephrase it. Because I am proud
you
to be a
Bajan. You're casting it this way for your own reason. But you're the only person who's proud to be a Bajan?
No, but I can say...
You think that people who criticize Barbados are not proud to be Bajan?
But Mr. Ellis, I am the only one that can say, and that I ain't shame.
Well, I'm among the people who criticize things around here, and I am proud to be a Bajan nonetheless.
But thank God that Toby can say. Thank God that
and
Toby
there are many, can say. There are many, many more like us.
But thank God for
what's
that.
What's this thing about trying to suggest that just because people say they don't agree with this or that, that all of a sudden they are part of a whole gang of persons who just want to tear the country apart? That's not what it is.
Mr. Ellis,
we all got to live here. You know, Cameron Tudor used to say, and it's really true, don't spit in the soup. We all have to drink out of it.
Exactly. That's why they say it all the time. Half my family and half is these.
You see.
But you can't hate nobody.
Well, I hope so.
You can't hate nobody. Half is these and half is these.
But I want to say something to you, though. You see, on that very point that you made about the projection of Barbados by the survey, what you didn't tell the people is that one morning on the same Sagicor early business, that was the featured, the particular point that was featured. So on the one hand, you got the negatives coming from the Telegraph, and on the other hand, you got the positives coming from that. But you see, you're so convenient that you would only point out the negative associated with it.
But I can tell you, I ain't hear the negative.
I know. You listen conveniently.
No, I read the negative. I read the positive in the paper. So I read it in the paper. I didn't hear that on the thing.
Yeah.
But things that jump out at you, like Mr. Ellis, that's how you just react when things jump out at me. And I'm saying that you, as a member of the fourth estate, should be calling on that lady.
To do what?
To put the number one in the same.
To do what? Call on the lady to do what?
To publish.
Man, the most that you could be saying is that you should put the two of them together. But at the end of the day, that's the most you could say. But let me say this to you.
The
Barbadian public deserves to know, in the same way that they must know when the positives are being said about us in important magazines and newspapers in the world, when that kind of comment is being made about us, that we stink, and we really do, and they put the focus on the sewage project, and then make allude to corruption in Barbados and that sort of thing. We need to know. We need to be aware of what is being said, because it implies that we have to clean up our act. You and I live here, and we know that what was said in that article is being said in Barbados.
Mr. Ellis.
She didn't say anything that isn't being said in this country.
I have no problem with she giving the information that she is fed. I want she to also publish the information from the exit visitors. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
I like balance.
Let's move
on. So you could get she to print that too.
I have no influence over the woman. You give people the impression that she's a buddy of mine. Down to brass tacks.
Hello, hi, David.
Yes.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm well, and you?
I'm not too bad. Can I get half or even a quarter of the thing that you just get for your expenditure?
No.
Why not?
You don't deserve it.
Well, that's true. But you see, and I know that you know where you're coming from, and you don't let me talk because you don't let nobody to criticize you.
That is correct.
You, right? let me say this to you.
I'm above criticism, as you well know.
Well, I am surprised at that.
Yes.
I can tell you this, huh? I know that Peter Wickham, they're going to get cut. I hear that everything. Since last year, I hear
cut
that
running
away to get Peter Wickham off the program. And it now, because I cannot understand, for 5 years, you mounted our VOB program, Grassdots, mounted a lot of programs asking the Democratic Labour Party representatives to come on the program, with the exception of two. The exception of two, Don Valenis and Chris Sinclair sometimes, was finally available to come. But today, no election is in the air. You could put a whole program to give them fellas a springboard. Because it's all about them, you know. It's all about them. And look where you're doing. You don't do it on Monday or Friday when you got 2 bites at the cherry. You curtail Peter Wickham program, the most listened to moderator in this country. You curtail the man. David, them things ain't right. Them things are not right. Right? And I want to know from you. Right? Is Peter Wickham off the program entirely, or he still have a showing on your program?
Let me put it to you this way. We have a series of programs coming on Tuesday. A mix of moderators will be involved in that Tuesday session, and Peter Wickham will be anchoring at least one of those programs, definitely one of them.
But
all right?
David,
that is the final position. Peter Wickham works with us here as a moderator, and I am not prepared to get involved in any further discussion on this matter with
because
you.
Because that's how you operate. That's
precisely,
you
because you know why? There is a standing rule. When you are dealing with people who work with you, you do not discuss certain things in the public domain.
David,
and I would be grossly out of place to pursue this with you. You can have your opinion, but I am not going any further. Okay? As far as I'm concerned, remember this. We have been in a relationship of this type for a very long time. We are now on the cusp of general elections. We have to do things a bit differently because at the core of this, we are talking about giving Barbadians and the political parties the opportunity to discuss the main issues impacting on our country.
Can okay? I rebuttal? Can I rebuttal?
You can say anything you want, Zay.
I want to say this here. I remember when a severe was taken out, right? And it pushed Tony Marshall ahead of David Ellis. David Ellis find every constable place thing to get Tony Marshall off the program. And you should...
I'm here to defend myself against that. And let me also say it to you. I don't know what you mean.
You are very thin skin.
Will you just give me a chance? Because you are making serious allegations against me.
I want to say
this is unacceptable for you to come here and make that kind of allegation.
Well,
if you don't stop, I am going to cut you off the air because you cannot do that and not give me a chance to respond. Now, if anybody comes on the program and makes the kind of charge that you have made, which is that every conceivable step was taken to get somebody off the air, what pray tell are these steps that would have been taken to get a person off the air? Come, tell me what they could be.
Just like poor Ryan,
what are those things? What are those things?
I want to say something.
No. You ain't getting a chance to say anything else until you can back that up. Because you come here, believe that you are a pit bull, and you are in a position to tear people apart and that sort of thing, without anything of substance. And I wanted to say something else to you. Let me tell you something. I have a responsibility here. And I am not going to cede that responsibility to you or anybody else. The people who employ me expect me to conduct myself in a particular way, responsibly so. And if you don't like it, Mr. Wesley. Just too bad for you. And good afternoon. I'm not going to speak to this any further. I think I've already done more than I should have in entertaining you with these kinds of allegations. And you move from one to the next. It is unacceptable. Down to brass tacks.
A blessed good morning, David. How are you?
I'm well, and you?
Oh, I might be good. Call us and you want to make me pay for ad. You remember?
Yeah, but sometimes you should be made to pay. You don't get a bill yet.
Man, no, you remember what I told you?
What was that?
That I'm a popular fella in my neighborhood, and the people cherish me dearly. You remember that conversation we had?
I hear you.
No, you listen, and I show you too. David, you know, I was going to call this program, right? Days get to me. I was regular how you deal with Wesley, but what hurting me, David, you made a statement this morning.
What's that?
That we don't deal with the issues. David, you see that cell phone bill? That cell phone thing that come up? That is one of the most disgraceful things that have ever happened to poor people.
What cell phone thing? You mean with respect to the law and driving?
Yes, the
and
law.
Using your
no, David,
cell phone and while driving?
Yes, I can tell you why. Things in this country does only affect the poor people. And you should have picked up that, David. You were not on the ball. Why I say that? Because they keep on asking you who is the better person, you know. An educated person or a common sense person? You remember that conversations we've got? And up to know you, Dennis, and lately, Corey can't answer. Now,
where you going with this, though?
Where you going with is this place. You see them vehicles that got that heavy tank that you can't see in? Then should come under the microscope. You know a lot of accidents is being caused in this country when the day come because people having oral sex in the car?
What?
Yes. But four of my friends were involved in accidents, and when the man oral sex was being performed for me. Sorry. The woman, the same thing. Guys, no, you laugh. No, David, you laughing at a very serious matter.
Peter, you heard that?
It's me laughing, not him, not David.
But no, David, I got further.
Peter, where does man come from?
No, the fact, and you don't like
where you come from? So what? So your position is therefore...
No, David, I'm finished.
Is the tinting of the vehicle's windows?
There should be a law against that, too.
That's what you're saying?
But, David, I'm going to look further now. You see...
Listen, you're really going too far now. You got to edit him. I don't want that to go down here because he really is pushing the envelope. You're pushing the envelope now because you're getting to the point where... You know, you're going to offend some people with the way you're talking.
David, you should not be eating in vehicles.
So what are you going to do?
That's a distraction.
So what are you saying?
There's a lot of distractions besides the cell phone.
That is true. But you cannot come here and seriously make an argument against the ban that has been placed on the use of cell phones while driving just because other things happen.
But David, you ever hear Peter pay for Paul and Peter? We don't pay for Peter, but we are paying for all.
Man, I tell you, some of you could come up with some things here.
But David, that is the fact of the police. That is a fact of life. And we do not...
Do you concede... Would you concede that it is dangerous to drive and use your cell phone? Would you accept that?
Yes.
Right. And therefore, in those circumstances, you don't think that it is better to try to protect people in that regard?
Oh, you asked me a question. I agree with you so far. I ask you one. Don't you think it is dangerous for people to be eating and drinking in the vehicle too?
Yeah, but there's also... Do you know that the law has a particular approach which says that you must pay due care and attention.
Yeah,
so whether you are eating or having the kind of sex that you were talking about, if it reaches the point where you cannot... give adequate care and attention to driving on the road, then you are likely to be guilty of creating an offense.
But David, when a fellow got to look down to see if he can eat a sausage or tackle a bait, that is also driving without due care and attention. So this law should have gone further.
All right. So you are saying it should have gone further.
further.
Okay.
But then I do my research and all, and if you don't mute chat with anybody, three of them, I could give you the names, but I will not give you able to call you. Like, oh, you see, you're the dear? I said, remember, a popular fella in my neighborhood, and the people cherish me dearly. And you know, the fella now got the breeze at $60.80. He carried it with 80 cents now. And he went down the road and get it for $49.
All right. Thank you very much. Peter, anything you heard recently that you need to come back on? He is outrageous, though.
Entertaining. No, I just wanted this thing on the date, which is a caller, a few callers back.
On the date?
Talking about the date, yeah. And I concur with Ezra. I've put a position in the press as well that the election automatically calls itself 27 days before the 90th day. Essentially, what will happen then is a proclamation that can be issued. Now, my understanding is that this thing can happen automatically without the Prime Minister getting involved. And he breaks no laws, there's nothing illegal. It's just, as Ezra said, it's a convention that suggests that there's ways. But my thing is that there's a political wisdom that suggests that it's something the Prime Minister ought to do, because it's a power that he has that he ought to exercise, because it sends a signal when so much time has passed and nothing has been said.
What's that signal?
It sends a signal that basically you have breached the protocol that says you have 5 years. And that you have not given a justification. And there are a couple of precedents. If you look at Kamala Prasad, the Cessa, she used that time. She allowed it to automatically dissolve and then for the election to automatically be called. But she gave a justification. In Antigua, Baldwin Spencer did the same thing. He allowed it to dissolve but did not identify a date because he was waiting on the court to resolve a boundaries matter. So he also gave a justification. What's peculiar about what Stuart is doing now is that he's not attempting to explain anything other than the fact that he just doesn't feel like doing it and that he will do it before he's out. The time has come. And, I mean, we need to be clear. He's not breaking any law. It's entirely legal. I think it's politically unwise, but, you know, I've been wrong before, so it's possible that I'm wrong this time.
But this also gives you additional time to put your house in order. And you don't have Parliament to look over your shoulder.
To bother you. Yeah,
yes,
which is really the part that I think is lacking in political wisdom, because it tells us that he needs more than 5 years to put his house in order, which to me, he should not have been doing that. You should have put your house in order in 5 years, because that's the time you were given. You know, so we're now looking at a 62-month administration, which is the longest ever in history. The last one was 61 months. We're looking at 62 months, because the feeling is that he's not going to call it until after he gets his two conferences out of the way. The other point, too, is that if he wants to go to those two conferences, he can't call the election before, because there's a convention. I'm not sure about how the OAS operates, but there's a convention with the Commonwealth that a prime minister will not attend while there's an election scenario in play. But you recall well, David, because you're older than me, you remember the 1994 scenario when Sandiford hosted the global conference after he had dissolved Parliament.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of talk and discussion about whether that was appropriate. The difference is that it wasn't a conference that he was coming to. It's a conference that he was hosting as chair. So I guess there is some precedent, and you know, maybe we can have discussions.
There's one thing for sure about it. You know what is certain about it? You know what is certain about it?
It will come.
You will now be able to talk about Mr. Stuart in a historical context.
Indeed.
Pushing the envelope in this regard. Doing something that was not done before.
Not before.
Yes.
Right. So Stuart and Natalie. David, I'm going to have to run, though.
Okay.
So I want to thank you for...
All right. Well, thanks for coming.
...the Business Morning Program.
All right.
I hope I can chat again.
All right. Thank you. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, morning.
Okay, finally. Mr. Ellis, I started voting in 1981.
Mm-hmm.
I live in St. John. I've been voting in St. John all my time. I've never voted for anyone other than the DLP candidate. That will not happen again, Mr. Ellis. I'm getting to that, Mr. Ellis. Sometime ago, that rumor was rife in St. John that George Pilgrim would be the person seeking to represent us. I, along with a couple of my friends, we were at a favorite watering hole, and we saw a senior member at the DLP. And I took it upon myself to approach him. I said, is that true, that you are defending George Pilgrim? And the guy looked me in the eyes, and he said, that is not true. It will not happen. He said, if the good lady is not coming back, and Stephen Lashley from Among Us is not going to come. He would come himself. And I said, thank you. And I walked away. Miss Ellis, we don't know anything about George Pilgrim. All during the Barrow years, all during the Thompson years, both of them, we never saw this guy. He never sought to establish any kind of relationship with us. And here it is now. This opportunistic thing, he is going to be... I read in the paper that he said, I will be the next representative for the DLP in St. John. Without any input from any of us. Hear me, Mr. Ellis. I believe that if the DLP lose this election, and most people are saying when they lose this election, they will be in opposition for a long time. The St. John seat is a seat where somebody with good political future, a young person of which they could rebuild the party around, should be sitting in this seat. I don't see George Pilgrim as that person. And anytime that I am home, there are three houses on this compound with about 10 to 12 votes. And George Pilgrim turns up with Miss Thompson. Are you going to tell him straight, stay in the road, I do not know you. I cannot understand the processes that we have to go through to have an input in who you want to represent us.
What was that, done in the past in St. John?
Listen, we had nomination day. We had input from the branch offices and all that kind of stuff, Mr. Ellis. I was around politics from 1980-81. I never saw George Pilgrim. I don't know anything about the guy.
You have been a member of the constituency branch for the Democratic Labour Party?
I nominated Anthony Bob Waldron at one time, even ahead of Miss Thompson.
Right. So among people who are DLP stalwarts in the constituency, what are you hearing? Because you're speaking for yourself.
I am hearing, Mr. Ellis, you saw that poll that Mr. Wickham did?
Yes.
That is accurate, you know. That representing a lot of what is going on. There are many of us that are so frustrated that we will not vote. But I ain't none of them, Mr. Ellis. I am voting for not George Pilgrim. Now I'm voting for Mara Thompson again either.
You're really frustrated.
But Mr. Ellis, look, Mr. Ellis.
How does the party work it in such a way that it could incense people like you in this way? I mean, there seems to be an assumption that if you send a dog or a cat or anybody for that matter to St. John, they're going to win the seat.
Typically, Mr. Ellis, we are treated like chattel. We seem to be of so low intellect that the DLP have already decided, regardless of who we put up there, them jokers can vote for them. Mr. Ellis, I could understand, or we had no choice but to vote for Barry, you know. And we had no choice but to vote for...
Why had you no choice?
Because, come on, Mr. Ellis, who else was in Mr. Barrow's class?
Okay.
And to a lesser extent, who else would have been in Mr. Thompson's class?
Yeah.
But we were misguided by our love for Mr. Thompson and voting for his wife. The first time we were misguided by our sympathy. And the second time was a big mistake. Even Miss Thompson would admit that. Why are we making that same mistake no more?
Where did she go wrong?
Mr. Ellis, I don't think that she has the real construct of a politician.
Okay.
She just does, and I am also of the opinion that she was treated badly.
Mr.
Ellis, some time ago, St. Joseph and St. John were identified as the two poorest parishes in the island. Mr. Ellis, if you got 11 children and told them sickly, who you can spend the most money on medically? You ain't going to try to fix up the two that sickly. You mean you can keep feeding the ones that the health all right? And no effort has been made, not by the DLP either, or by this DLP in the last 10 years to do anything for this parish. Mr. Ellis,
there's a road in
Rosegate, St. John, that a culvert was dug out about 2 years ago. The road is impassable now. The culvert was dug out. All the material is in the job on the site. All they need to do is to get workmen some cement and rebuild the culvert. And it is there sitting for over 2 years. Over 2 years, Mr. Ellis. You know what I mean? And this is, look, the road, my gap, was paved in 1967. You know what I'm saying, Mr. Ellis? 1967. And it has not been done with anything with it since then. And this is what we live with.
Wow. It does. The picture that you paint is one that, you know, is pretty worrying, and I bet to see how the Democratic Labour Party itself responds to these concerns.
Mr. Ellis, just let me say this one thing. You know, sometime ago, Mr. Barr said that sooner or later the parish will vomit up, I think that's the expression he used, will vomit up a son from among them to represent the parish?
I'm not familiar something with that.
It's something to that, right? Yeah. But you know, Charles Griffiths is looking like that person that Mr. Barr spoke about. I have not decided who I'm going to vote for. There are two Griffiths up here, and I will vote for one of them. I have not decided which one yet. But I will say this. If Hudson Griffiths was still the BLP candidate in St. John, he would have been this seat hands down. Because there's a massive swing. And not necessarily meaning that the people will vote BLP, but by saying, oh, we're not voting at all, that could be just as damaging. One last question, Mr. Ellis.
Sure.
I would like to ask the Prime Minister, what is this game he's playing with announcing an election date? I mean, Mr. Ellis, this country has some serious decisions to make. We got a government to restructure. We got foreign exchange problems. We got all kinds of serious pressing issues to deal with. And the Prime Minister is loitering on the steps of Parliament way past closing time, twiddling his thumbs. What difference does it make, Mr. Ellis, whether he announced the date now or next 3 weeks? And I hear a lot of you commentators asking the question, if we are ready for our female Prime Minister. I would like to say to all those out there, the best way to prove whether we are ready or not, call the election. Let the Barbadian people decide whether we are ready for our female Prime Minister or not. Call the election. We don't want a debate. Have a good day, Mr. Ellis.
Thank you. Down to brass tacks. Down to brass tacks, going until 2 o'clock today. Hello?
Hi, good morning.
Morning, how are you?
I'm fine, what about you?
I'm fine, too.
I was on about for hour anyway.
I apologize, but you know how it is.
I'm a cell phone, too. Just come in here, and I found St. John, right, David?
St. John?
Yeah.
Yes.
Peter had all his pause and stuff, so we're hearing different people from St. John, you'll get a better analogy.
Sure.
And can also make your stats to soup. Problems with St. John. The DLP, as they say, that was ruling for all this time, the last representative, the people do not see her. Hands down. Hudson, the point the man made just now, if Hudson was still on the DLP ticket, he would have won. I believe that strongly. A lot of us believe it strong because the only politician that represented St. John that you would see him in St. John doing work is Hudson. If they say he's a politician, if you have strongholds in a constituency, would you be lingering in your strongholds, keeping meetings in your strongholds? Or would you be coming out into what is not your stronghold to try to win over votes from the people that don't vote for you?
Mm-hmm.
Charles Griffith holds his meeting in Clifton Hall, Four Roads, which is close to the same Cherry Grove that the stronghold B, and Clifton Hall, Sherman, that stronghold B. Up to now, the people in College Savannah, the people in Sergeant Street, Court Hill, College Land, Welch, Massey Street, in St. Charles Griffith. The only possible way that Charles Griffith could win this election, which the gentleman that spoke to you just now said, is because a lot of disease is fed up and they're coming out. But if you check the results from the last election, Hudson Griffith got over 1,000, Marathon got over 4,000. 3,000 people voters will have to decide to just ain't voting. Then Hudson Griffith will be taking away some of the votes from the same B, because the B's that followed Hudson in the last election still sticking with Hudson, despite the discrepancies that he had, that he had to leave the party, the BLP party. So it is even tougher now for Charles Griffith to gain votes, because he's going to lose votes that Hudson would take away from him as he was being represented for the BLP and the ground that he had made. There's only two candidates that get over 1,000 votes in St. John for the BLP. That was the lady that ran against Thompson, Pat Tarnan.
Yes.
And Hudson Griffith. And he did a lot of groundwork.
You know, it is often said, that general elections in Barbados represents 30 by elections. However, you need to take into consideration national mood and national swings too. It's not all about the representatives and how they are handling things in St. John. It is also a question too of the link between St. John and the rest of Barbados as well. So yeah, how do you see that playing into the St. John equation?
You know, national swings have nothing to do with St. John, because when there's a swing, a national swing going, St. John stick to one party. But there could be biggest swing mood, the biggest bowling, the biggest swing ever, impressing the biggest celestial panel in the world. St. John still sticks to one party.
Listen, there was just been an election in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Republican territory. And Trump had to go and pull out all the stops and still barely lost his seat. Previously, he had won by 20% or something like that. So I'm saying to you, therefore, that while there are certain patterns, yes, that can hold true, there are some changes that can occur that can surprise a lot of people. I always refer to the St. Michael's seat that Branford Tate had, which was seen as a stronghold, you know, a Democratic Labour Party stronghold. And he lost that seat.
No. The next thing, one is that the representative didn't see him as much, which is for the DLP. Two, the way how they're handling no bringing in George Pilgrim into the scenario is another downfall for them as well. Three, the people condemning the DLP to have 14 years and did not look at St. John whatsoever. Now, if I'm a leader of a party and I win the election, and who ain't vote for me, you ain't going to be rich, hands down. But it's the country you must look at. Now, if you have these people, the D's condemning B's that had 14 years in power and did not look at St. John, the D's turn around now and got 10 years in power and still ain't look at St. John, tell me what the situation is there. I guess they should go for the UPP then. Because you condemning one party for not looking at when it was in power 14 years, the same one that condemning the B's, get in now. This is their stronghold, the people that never turn the back on them, and then do nothing for them as well. So that's the situation. And they tend to treat St. John people like fools. But I will always tell you this, David. St. John people is the most independent people in Barbados.
Well, I've heard that
a
lot.
We pay road tax, we pay church, we pay land tax, we pay our taxes to anybody else. We get neglects, we don't get no political favors, we don't get nothing. And we just go along about our business like anybody else. There's some of the most beautiful houses in St. John's and development areas and infrastructure in terms of...
But I thought that over the years, somebody is saying something here which I tend to agree with. They say here that the DLP will win back in St. John because the BLP didn't look at St. John. And they use as an example how they dealt with the polyclinic. I could never understand the thinking of politicians who basically seem to write off particular seats and behave as though they will never get the opportunity to make inroads there. If you carry that mentality, and I do agree that the Barbados Labour Party in its last term in office, its last period in office, carry that kind of attitude to St. John. Now you see that the situation has gotten so bad that, you know, they could be within striking distance of changing if only they had handled the situation even better, you know. The very point there with respect to the guy who last ran for the BLP and has gone with the UPP. But based upon what you all are telling me, perhaps from all that you gather around the place, that is the place where the UPP may get its best performance yet.
He's the most favorable member that is running St. John right now. Mm-hmm. But what is going against it is because, you know, two parties.
The party, yes. BND. Yes.
So the party might be...
Because at the end of the day, the question is still going to be asked, and what can you do for me? You're complaining that too little has been done for St. Lucie, for St. John.
But you might ask him, what can you do for me? Mm-hmm. But when you want to elect a BRD, they still ain't doing nothing for you. So it is a matter of what you could do for me. It is a matter of making a statement.
But would it make sense? Let's say the Barbados Labour Party. Well, I think both of them are in a similar situation right now. I think what is happening today is indicative of the need for change in the way that they deal with St. John.
Correct.
And I don't believe that we are going to, after this election, I doubt very much that we are going to see that degree of neglect in that parish, because it is likely that it could be thrust into a completely different paradigm altogether. You know, so we wait and see. And
I would like to let the people of St. John to know, because that your heart is with a man, it doesn't mean that you can't look for change. So
if somebody wants to know if you remember Hudson Linton getting 1,100 votes in 1976
in St. John.
Okay. All right. We're going to the regional roundup.